This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Today, a special preview edition looking ahead to the BAFTAs. We'll hear from Mark Herbert, producer of This Is England, nominated as Best British Film, and Daniel Batsek, president of Miramax Films, behind There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men, both up in the Best Film category. First, Sam Riley, nominated for his performance as Ian Curtis in Control. It seems a long time ago that all the fuss and bother was being made about the films now coming out on DVD. It's all going to start again, isn't it? And people are going to be asking you to do that dance again.
That's never stopped. But I think it all kind of started in Cannes last year, because we shot it in summer 2006. And then there was sort of a 9-month period or whatever before. It was the first time I saw it was in Cannes, which was quite terrifying. Experience, but I hope it doesn't. I don't know. The last 6 months I've been a travelling salesman, really. I'd like to have another stab at acting, to be honest.
I'm sure we'll get on to that in just a moment. I think everybody who grew up through the 70s will have come to the film with a particular interest in it, and they get to that point where you sing the first note, and there was, when I was watching, this audible sigh of relief, thinking, that's it. It's fine.
Yep.
Not only can you act, but you've got it. You absolutely nailed it. And everyone knows that in the first 10 seconds that you had it.
Oh, thanks.
That's fine. That's all you have to say on that. Was it more difficult? I mean, did you try to do an impression? Were you doing your version of Ian Curtis? What were you aiming for?
I was trying to sing as much like him as possible, but I knew I wasn't perfect. But I knew that the sort of dancing mannerisms, or whatever you want to call it, had to be as close as possible, because they were the thing that everybody does know Ian Curtis for. Nobody's ever seen him talking. There's no interview footage of Ian. And there's only just over an hour's worth of footage in existence of them playing anyway. But the most terrifying thing was that all the extras were Joy Division fans. That way they were cheap.
Yes.
So the very first day they were
tough to impress.
There were 150... After we'd persuaded Anton to let us play it ourselves rather than do playback, we then realised what we'd got ourselves in for when 150 Joy Division fans turned up.
I'd say on this point, because this is key to me. You know, I'm kind of very interested in pop movies and rock movies, and I think the key thing is, and there's a comparison here with what happens with Marianne Cotillard and La Vie en Rose. I would always rather, if you have a film like this in which you hear somebody's talking voice, and there's a scene, for example, in which he sees somebody have a seizure and he writes, "She lost control," and then later on we hear him singing that line. And it's crucial that the voice that you hear talking is the voice that you hear singing, whether or not it's you don't want to hear Ian Curtis's voice, you want to hear Sam Riley's voice in that character. And I've always said that actually one of the problems with La Vie en Rose, in which I think Marion Cotillard is a fantastic actress, and I've heard on the DVD her doing the Edith Piaf impression, and okay, she doesn't sound like Piaf, but I'd rather have that. I mean, she sounds close enough, and it's more, but I still, it's a very brave thing to do. You look back at the history of it, Gary Busey doing it in the Buddy Holly story. Of course, he ended up recording an album with the Crickets, which there is, you know, no greater praise. The moments that Val Kilmer is good in The Doors is the moments when he's actually doing the Jim Morrison
stuff.
Yeah,
he was pretty good.
He was. It's a good. And of course, you know, Joaquin Phoenix in Walk the Line. And I think this is yet another demonstration that if somebody has got the guts to step up to the line, it always pays dividends. Besides, the minute you start doing that, everyone, exactly, in that can screen, they did. They went, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
Can relax. There's a sequence towards the end where the extremely manic dance routine that you're in becomes an epileptic fit.
Yeah.
Was there any sense that there actually was a connection? You know, that whole movement that he did was related to his epilepsy?
I don't know whether that ever caused epilepsy, although exhaustion
and alcohol.
Yeah. And he stopped taking his medication later on anyway, didn't he? Because he said that it took the edge off his...
I think so, yeah. I mean, they say to you, you know, get plenty of sleep and stay away from alcohol. And if you look at Joy Division's touring schedule and the way they were touring in the back of a van, you know, I mean, you never... It was the opposite of what he needed, really. But I think the dance was probably also there a bit before his epilepsy. I think that was just his way of expressing himself as best he could.
I mean, you obviously studied this more closely, but I watched some footage because there was an R.E.M. live film which came out this year, towards the end of last year, in which there's the similar kind of trance-like expression come, and I was watching your face, watching your eyes. It's not just the dance, but you're losing. It's almost, it is a trance that you're going into, isn't it? Same as Michael Stipe.
We tried to, yeah. I think it did come about easier once. It was difficult to do it because we did try and mime it originally, but we were told to go and rehearse so that we could at least do it convincingly. And then in the end, it made more sense.
Because there's a couple of times where you're standing with your hands over the top of the microphone, yeah, and your mouth is behind that, and you're thinking, oh, hang on a second.
But it's cheating, yeah.
It becomes
no,
quite
that was
obvious.
The way that was the way he did it. And when you hear the music, when I could hear the guys actually playing it behind me, then it somehow made it all very, very real to us.
But so. It's also the great advantage of Georgie Rosen's songs is that they were, at least in that early set, they were technically fairly easy. They were, you know, three note. But no, I'm not saying that.
No, that's true.
You could get up to speed and play them, you know.
James, who played Bernard Sumner, had never, you know, he told him he'd played a bit of guitar, but he didn't. And now he can play nine songs as long as they're Joy Division. So it's not much fun at a party. But
the DVD's out on Monday. But my favourite line, it's quite a good line. Is I think it's after you first have a fit and you're lying on the floor, and is it Tony Wilson says, or it could be worse? Could be worse. You could be the lead singer of The Fall. But of course, you were in 24 Hour Party People.
Yeah, but that's I actually auditioned to play the drummer in Joy Division, but I'd been thumped in Leeds the night before the audition, so I turned up with a black eye and a big plaster, and Winterbottom said, hey, Marquis Smith, because he's always getting thumped by his bandmates. And I was there for about an hour and a half and took seven mates to the cinema and was cut out in the end. So although I was in 24 Hour Party People, it's
got a funny line, though.
Really, yeah. It's a good line. It was in there before that as well.
So what are you doing next, Sam? You said you want another go at acting. Now what are we seeing next?
I just finished a film called Franklin with Ryan Felipe and Eva Green. It's a British movie by first-time director Gerald McMurrow. And it's sort of a weird... I'm not really allowed to say much because I give the game away, but it's part parallel universe, part contemporary London.
All right.
It's interesting.
Can we just do that? And where do you stand on the Comsat Angels, Sam? Because I just want to get this nailed.
Which ones? Who are the Comsat
Angels? Yeah, you see, I knew, I see, and that's it. And now it's all finished.
Is that your band, Mark?
No, is it my band?
He thinks
the Comsat Angels were the great band that Joy Division could have been had they been able to, you know.
But not that great.
They were brilliant. They came out of Sheffield. It was around the same time as.
Enough. That's enough.
Wonderful. First three albums are probably fabulous. You need to go and
check it out.
It's not that interesting.
They're brilliant.
And they weren't that great. Anyway, Sam Riley, thanks for that.
Says the man who likes you too.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Yeah, where do you stand on you two?
You and Anson.
Where do you stand on you two?
Oh, come on.
Now, where do you stand on you two? Seriously.
I've never been a particularly big fan.
And now it's back on again.
Thanks.
Yeah, we love each other again. It's
thanks a lot for coming. I hope it goes really well.
Thank you, Simon.
And you get that nod.
Lovely to meet you.
And the DVD is out on Monday of Control. Anton Corbin, who I think is probably a U2 fan, I think it's fairly safe to say.
Yeah, it is.
Now, among the movies, let's have a look at Best Film category. We have American Gangster, Atonement, The Lives of Others, No Country for Old Men, and There Will Be Blood. Our entertainment reporter Colin Patterson has been speaking to Daniel Day-Lewis, nominated in the Leading Actor category, asked him what attracted him to the film.
There was no one aspect as opposed to any other. It was just that thing in its entirety. The world that Paul created, the entire examination of a life from the first whisper of an idea through to this outrageous conclusion, I just thought it was this tremendously audacious and honest exploration of a life.
I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed.
He's quite a character.
Yeah, he's a character.
And what a start to the film. 20 minutes of silence.
Well, it would have been actually longer than that. We shot a longer version, and in the script it was longer. It was a more involved sequence, and that was one of the things that utterly delighted me as I was reading it. As I turned one page after another, I thought, how long is he going to keep this going? And I thought it was just so cheeky. But he tells you everything you need to know about that man in that sequence without ever saying a word.
The interesting thing about that is when Colin says that, you know, 20 minutes of silence, what you mean 20 minutes of no dialogue, but of course what you got from that clip is 20 minutes of the most extraordinary noise and music by Johnny Greenwood, who's nominated for a music BAFTA on Sunday. but who, as far as I understand, was ruled ineligible for the Oscars at the last moment, at the very last moment, from some technicality about some part of the music had been performed in advance. Which seems to me to be nonsense because it's such an extraordinary score.
Wouldn't it be nice? Sorry, Mark. Just hold on one second. Would it be nice to speak to the man who gave it the green light in the first place?
It would. You mean Daniel Batzak?
Yeah. Do you think that would be appropriate?
I think that would be appropriate right now.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. Say hello to Simon as well.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Simon.
That's all right. Hello, Daniel. How are you, president of Miramax Films? Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Was this an obvious green light? Did you have to think about it for a while?
I had to think about it for a while, I have to be honest. But you back your filmmakers, and Paul Thomas Anderson is someone whose movies I've loved right from the word go. And then when you add Daniel Day-Lewis to the mix and you have such an incredibly ambitious screenplay, you just got to back a hunch, and this one turned out to be a good one.
So what were the issues as you were trying to, work out what to say back? Clearly you respect the main actor and you respect the director, so your concerns were?
Well, we're an independent company. It's an expensive film to make, and you have to sort of look into the future and imagine what sort of effect the film is going to have on critics and on audiences, and sort of just watch how it goes. And so all those things are sort of churning around your head when you're just reading it on the page, and there's so much that you have to imagine, and sometimes you just have to let your heart lead, even if your head is a little bit more wary.
I think the thing it's worth saying here, for those who haven't seen the film, because it only opens today, is I'm sure that reading the film, Daniel, is an entirely different experience to seeing it. Because I've seen it a couple of times now. The first screening that I saw of it, I mean, it was so disorientating. I love it. It is, but as I've said before, it is like watching someone reinvent the grammar of cinema in front of you. It's such a disorientating experience. It's not the kind of thing that you look at and go, well, that's going to be a crowd-pleasing hit. Even with all the things, it's wonderfully directed. That score is extraordinary. Daniel Day-Lewis is obviously, having the best time he's had in a very long time. And Paul Dano, I think, is terrific as well. But it is a very, very edgy film. It's not an easy watch, is it?
No, it isn't. It isn't. It's challenging, but I think that as anybody who sees a lot of movies, that movies like this are few and far between. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're lucky enough to be involved with No Country for Old Men as well. And I think in both those cases, they are, they're very special films. And what's great is that there is an audience who are prepared to be challenged in the way that these films challenge them.
And you gave the green light for that as well?
I did, yeah. We both those movies are films that we did with as co-productions with Paramount Vantage. But yeah, they both are Miramax movies, and we're very proud of them.
And what do you and looking ahead to the BAFTAs this weekend, what difference does it make? There's obviously a lot of difficulty around the award ceremonies this year in general because of the writers' strike. The importance of BAFTAs is what, would you say, Daniel?
Well, I think this year in particular, the stars are going to come out for BAFTA because they've had to stay at home for a while now, as several of the awards ceremonies in the U.S., particularly the Golden Globes, got cancelled because of the writer's strike. So it'll give everyone an opportunity to, dress up and be seen on the red carpet, which is part of what all awards ceremonies are about. BAFTA has definitely moved up the scale anyway over the last few years, partly because of the change of date, and partly just because I think the whole show is just that much more prominent. But it's, it's one of a number of award ceremonies, and I've been to a few over the last few weeks, so it is another one, but it is one of the more prestigious ones for sure.
And it's been good for you over the years, hasn't it, whether it's The Queen or Calendar Girls?
Yeah, well, particularly for The Queen, yes. I mean, it was great last year, and winning Best Film gave us an enormous boost as we headed on towards the Oscars. And obviously, I'm hopeful, but we'll see what happens. That both No Country and There Will Be Blood will feature on Sunday night, and then we can use that to carry on their releases internationally and in the US.
And you're currently at the Berlin Film Festival. What are you looking for there?
There Will Be Blood actually starts its international release. It concurrently in London tonight, And in Berlin at the festival tonight. So that's one of the reasons. And then looking at films, Mike Leigh's new film just screened today, which was very enjoyable. And there's a lot of new movies premiering over the next few days.
I don't know if you can help us with this. Just a listener's question, Daniel, while you're with us. Duke in Glasgow says, could you explain why the There Will Be Blood is only getting a London-only release this week? Surely there's enough prints and interest in it to be sky-high across the country.
I would love to think that there are many, many more people like your listener ready to see There Will Be Blood tonight. But what we tend to find is that it just, you know, we need to kind of get it open, get those national reviews flowing. I mean, we couldn't release it at all until tonight. And so it will come very quickly. I think next week we'll broaden out to the rest of the UK. But in our experience, it just takes a little bit more time for the word of mouth to spread across the country.
And what is the next Miramax film that you are excited about?
Well, we're also involved in The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which is a movie that I adore, which we only own the US rights for, but is a beautiful film. And then hopefully featuring this time next year is a film called Doubt with Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman, from a Pulitzer Prize-winning play. So that's one of our high hopes for later in the year. Brideshead Revisited is also a movie that I'm very excited about.
Daniel, appreciate you talking to us today. Thanks very much indeed. That's Daniel Batsek. He's the boss of Miramax.
Can I say something about that? The London openings issue, because we get a lot of mail about this.
Yeah, and just to continue, Duke's email. I just read a bit of it to Dan. He says, surely it's enough prints and interest to be sky across the country for the interest in this. I can't remember anticipating the release of a film this much for years, and frankly, I'm very annoyed. Is it some perverse karma for us Scots getting The Exorcist re-released 2 weeks before?
Yeah, they did. They did. And in fact, actually, not just 2 weeks. They got the release several months before because Warners were jumpy about re-releasing it, and they tested it. What happens is this. If you have a film like, for example, this week, National Treasure, Book of Secrets, which nobody imagines the reviews are going to be any good for, because frankly, it's pants. You know, but it is what it is. You open it everywhere, day and date. You just bang, put it out on all the screens. That's it. Everyone goes to see it in the opening weekend. It takes all its money. If you have a movie that you think is going to benefit from word of mouth, that people who have seen it are going to go and say to other people, you know, I really like this film, you should go and see it. They tend to do what's known as a staggered release. I mean, I'm saying this to Mark, but Mark knows this anyway. And so
you're waiting to hear more from Mark Herbert, by the way, and Mark Herbert is waiting patiently to talk to us more. We'll get there. Don't worry about it.
So you get the...
In the gap that Mark leaves.
You get the opening release, and then what Daniel was saying, that the idea is you then pick up on the word of mouth and on the reviews and on that sort of thing. So generally, and this is a general rule, something that opens everywhere on the same day is not as good as something which builds. It's the way the distributors look at it.
Enormously frustrating if you have been waiting for this movie.
I understand that. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, remember, you know, when I started my journalist career, I mean, I was in Manchester, and that was the whole thing about, you know, you'd read about these movies in London's Time Out like 2 months before you finally saw them. But it is true that actually it's an indication not of lack of confidence, but of confidence.
We have a couple of BAFTAs still to talk about because Mark Herbert is here, and I'm just looking at the list. Mark, for Best British Film, Atonement, Bourne Ultimatum, Control, Eastern Promises, and there's This Is England. That's a pretty impressive list by anyone's standard, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I was the day that they were announced, I think we came up last, and I was thinking, God, there's I mean, and what's great with these, I love all of them. I mean, they're all really good films, and you know, especially like Control and Eastern Promises, which I loved last year. So, yeah, I mean, just to be amongst those is great for us.
An adapted screenplay, Atonement, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, Kite Runner, No Country for Old Men, There Will Be Blood, animated film, Ratatouille, Shrek the Third, The Simpsons Movie, leading actor George Clooney, Daniel Day-Lewis, James McAvoy, Viggo Mortensen, and Ulrich, is it Moore in The Lives of Others?
Yeah, and then original screenplay category.
Yes, best original.
Original screenplay, best adapted screenplay category, which crucially includes. The last shame. Time I looked, Shane Meadows yes. for This Is England.
Yeah. Sorry, it's been missed off my list. Oh, no, there it is. American Gangster, Juno, Lives of Others, Michael Clayton, This Is England.
This Is England.
So, the importance of these for a movie like yours.
I mean, with ours, it's interesting because I was obviously out on DVD. It was released in April last year. And we did the similar release that you're talking about with There Will Be Blood, and it worked for us as well. We went out on 60 prints, it went to 80 to up to 120.
And it's that word of mouth thing?
Word of mouth was really strong. We got great support from you know, from Mark and people like Radio 1, and the word of mouth really did work. And if you look at the way it was released, Optimum did a fantastic job with that. And I just think that, you know, it's true what they say. You know, you do need that. We can't go out on 200 prints and pack cinemas out. You know, you've just got to build and build and allow that to happen. So, yeah, but I think, so obviously we won the Best British Independent Film for that year, which was just pre the release, and that helped. But I think for the BAFTAs, it's such a big ceremony, and it's just exciting. Yeah. I'm excited about the goodie bag.
they still get handed out, don't they?
You get a really expensive, not like a bag that you have to go and sign for at BAFTA.
But nominees?
Nominees get a bag, yeah.
And what's in it?
Apparently jewellery, flights,
plasma televisions.
Something. It's a bit of a good kit. You know, apparently there's some necklaces and there'll be some champagne, some hair straighteners, which would be good for me.
Yes. Do you want to explain?
I'm bald.
Well, not really.
No, not much.
In keeping with the skinhead theme of the movie, you're wearing a number one.
It's worth just mentioning again, and when Shane was on the programme, he's been on twice, but when he came to talk about it, it is worth saying it's a skinhead movie, but it's a part of that skinhead culture which actually didn't get discussed, really, because... you explain.
Well, no, I think it's when Shane originally sort of talked to me about doing it, I just took taken some... I'd taken a couple of weeks off, and he rang up and said, I've got the next thing, and he explained about, and it was really about the music as much as anything else, about that kind of Trojan reggae, and for us and it was amazing to see in Berlin and in places where we've taped up the film how important that was to true skinheads, that side of the story was told. And of course, you know, Tomo came on this thing as well, and I mean that was part of the journey for us, was finding that little boy and seeing what happened to him was just a fantastic experience.
Whenever the casting of children is a crucial part of the movie, as it was, as you mentioned, this extraordinary lad that you found. The same story often appears to be told. You know, we knew it was going to be difficult. We searched high and low, and then right at the last minute, this little kid came in, and we knew instantly. And we've heard that story a million times. But finding someone who can carry a movie, but, I mean, if he'd been rubbish, you'd have been completely sunk.
We had some moments with him as well. I remember after the first week, he was in. We'd shot on the Monday to Friday, and it was tough for him. It was a lot of work. He's in every scene. And he just turned around to me and Shane in the trailer, and he was crying, and he said he couldn't do it. He felt that he just couldn't carry on that amount of work. And we pretended that we had somebody stood waiting behind the dining bus that was going to come in. But Shane said, look, you've got this one opportunity. So it was not a smooth ride, but, I mean, what he did, how he's grown as a character, as a person, and you know, a lot of that is down to somebody like Shane. I mean, you know, he was remarkable how Shane crafted that performance. And we worked with people like Tomo. I mean, we really tried to test him in the auditions as well. But ultimately, you just could... I mean, it sounds a bit crazy, but we did know within 2 seconds of him walking in and opening his mouth that was the one.
And yet, on the DVD, there is a thing... On the This Is England DVD, there is Tomo's original audition tape, which I tell you, if you to an untrained eye, it's you have no sense that in that kid... I mean, yes, because you've seen the film, you know it is, but it's this little kid who goes, you know, he's like this, and he's talking a bit like this, and he wonders where he should put his bike, and he's, you know, he's very different. There's nothing in that I see in that says he's got that performance in it. So clearly seeing that performance in somebody is a particular talent.
I think that's what Shane's got in abundance. And if you look at, we're talking to Sam before about Control, which was obviously Toby Kebbell, who was in Dead Man's Shoes. Similar, James got an incredible eye and instinct for that, and I don't know where it comes from, but he just can tell before anyone else. And you've got to learn to trust that as Shane's producer. You've got to learn to stick with it, and he's right. But he's done it not just once, but on numerous occasions.
So what's he gone on to do?
Toby played Rob Gretton in Control.
Tomo.
Tomo was actually, he's not around at the moment because he's up for a Critics Circle Prize tonight, but he's in Cuba with his dad at the moment. But he's acted in three things. He's knuckled down at school. He's doing really well there. He's really concentrating on his exams.
There was a TV show he was involved in, wasn't there?
It was in one with Steve Graham, who played Combo. He was involved in that. And then he did a film about 4 months ago, which is out at Pinewood, which is a thing called Little Rascals, which is out next year. And he's actually done a film that Shane did, this film that's over in Berlin, this kind of medium-length film called Summer's Town. And Tomo was in that, and he's going to put a fantastic performance in that again.
What are you working on, Mark, next? What do we see that's new from you?
I've just done two... I just got back from Sundance. We had two films over in Sundance that was part of this new studio that we set up called Warp X. One's called Donkey Punch, which premiered at Sundance, and the other one's called Complete History of My Sexual Failures. They'll both be out this year.
Intrigue us with something on both.
Well, Donkey Punch is about a kind of hedonistic...
It's the middle of the afternoon on the national radio station.
Really, But Donkey Punch is a thriller, which is a hedonistic party that goes wrong. And really was received very well down out at Sundance. And Complete Through My Sexual Failures is a documentary about Chris Waite, who is a guy who has been serially dumped by every girlfriend. And he's basically using this, he's interviewing them all one by one to try and find out what, you know, if he can make himself a better person, apply that and find a new girlfriend. And it's absolutely hilarious.
And when do we see those?
There should be, I think Edinburgh's going to be the UK premiere, so I imagine June
right.
time.
And then. And what time on Sunday is your call?
We've got this mad. I'm actually getting a suit fitted, which I'm really excited about.
Are you?
Yeah. I actually
made to measure right. suit.
Yeah.
Check you
so,
out.
So we're staying in the hotel. My wife's coming down tonight. We're going to make a weekend of it. So I think we start getting ready at about some ridiculous time, like 5 a.m. I think it's one of those. But 4 o'clock is our. We're having some drinks with our. Film for the financiers, the distributors who back the film. So we're just going to have a little quiet drink with Shane and Paddy and a few of us, and then
that's
got
to be unwise,
over.
Hasn't it? To have a drink
quiet drink
before
with
the ceremony.
Yeah, probably just calm the nerves down, you know. But I'm going to take it easy. I remember with Dead Man's Shoes. By the time that it got to our nomination, we'd all had too much. So I think it was a good job we didn't win. On this one, I'm going to take it a little bit easier.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming in. I hope you have a fantastic evening.
And that was Mark Herbert. Before that, Daniel Batsek and Sam Riley. The BAFTAs are on Sunday, the 10th of February. Thank you very much indeed for listening.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.